Hello, it's Shahid, and welcome back to another Creative Floor Awards podcast. Guess what I'm about to say? Our award show is open, and the next deadline, which is the third deadline, is the 5th of April, and the final deadline is the 12th of April, so time is definitely ticking. Anyway, you're not here to listen to that, you're here to listen to another agency tale. So welcome back to episode 4. If you want to contribute to an agency tale episode, you can send us a direct recording or you can jump on a call with me. Happy to set that up. Just get in touch with us at awards@thecreativefloor.com. We do not condone any of these stories. And if you are easily offended, please turn off now. No one's forcing you to continue any further than you need to. Big thank you to everyone who contributed to this episode. A thank you for all the incredible messages that I'm getting personally about how these episodes are making your day. So hopefully it's a little bit of a ray of sunshine in what is turning out to be a very busy and crazy year. Anyway, enjoy.
We used to have this principle. Well, it's not really a principle. It's like a saying, if you can't win a pen, I think it might have been, if you can't win a pencil, win a present. That's what it was. If you can't win a pencil, win a present, right? So we used to try as hard as we could on everything that we did to make great ads. But it's really hard to get great ads through the door, with all the stakeholders involved and all the research and all the nonsense and whatnot. And so there are some times where you just kind of go, okay, I've got to make this Honey Monster ad and I'm going to try and make it as good as I can, but it's not going to win a D&AD pencil. What else can I get out of it? And so we basically wrote a script around all the things that we wanted. So my partner wanted a snowboard. So we were like, oh, the Honey Monster's got to be into snowboarding. But we want this bespoke snowboard because it will look cool and it'll stand out on camera. So my partner, so we got that. And then I'm like, I've just bought a flat and I need like a chair. So I'm like, the Honey Monster's got to have this chair. It's got to be a very sort of specific Scandinavian chair. Because he's got to live in a cool flat, right? We just did all this shit, basically, because... And then just dropping little hints during the shoot, like, oh, that is a really nice chair. And, I've just moved house. And, like, and then at the end of it, like, the production company is like, do you want that chair? I'm like, yeah, I do, yeah. And my partner got a snowboard and then... Like there was some sort of kid in it who was exactly our size, dressed in Carhartt, because we wore Carhartt, so we were cool at the time. So we got like this coat and a pair of jeans. Just like, is that basically not stealing? But it's just like, do you know what? Fuck you. If you're not going to let us, you know, win a D&AD pencil, I'm going to get a fucking Scandi chair out of it.
Yeah. But that's anyway. A good little. That's a good little story that everyone I think could get something out of, right?
Like, I'm not sure it's the inspiration there that you're looking for, but I guess, you know, it is, I don't know, it speaks to a kind of just almost like a sense of fun and a sense of entrepreneurship. You know, we just had all these kind of attitudes, and it's like we just wasn't fearful at all. Wasn't fearful of anything. It was just like we're making stuff and getting stuff and going to parties and, you know. I mean, I know people who used to. No, I can't say that one. That used to expense. So we used to, back in the day, used to have like this, and you could expense sort of creative inspiration. We used to buy DVDs, watch them, and then sell them, and then like accrue the money to spend on shit. It's no wonder all those privileges have dried up, really. Completely abused.
Then in 2005, which was the year of Live 8, the kind of follow-up to Live Aid, Peter Suter, my boss, said to me and my art director, Daryl, at that time, do you want to come over to Richard Curtis's office? We're discussing something about the Live 8 concert. And I don't know if he didn't know what it was or he knew and didn't want to tell us, but it didn't seem like that. So we go over to Westbourne Grove or Portobello Road or something, to Richard Curtis's offices. And there's like a big bunch of couches all sort of facing each other, like in a square. And we all sit down and Richard Curtis comes in and there's another, you know, 10 people there of various, like, I don't think I knew who any of them were, but he said, okay, so the reason we're here is we have to choose the last song that everyone sings together on the stage at Live 8. And again, I was like, am I really supposed to do this? Like, I mean, how are we choosing this song? How come it's not like Paul McCartney's job or something like that? I wasn't complaining, but I was just like, okay. So we did that. And just to let you know, in case anyone ever gets into this situation in future, here's why some songs were rejected. So some people, I think Peter wanted to choose Heroes by David Bowie, which would have been a great song. And then you realize nobody really knows the words, not enough. Like, you need the whole of the crowd singing along. So you kind of go, we could be heroes just for one day. And then you go, what happens to the rest of the song? No one really knows. Oh, I don't know. So, and I don't think David Bowie was doing it anyway. So there was, that was sort of rejected for that reason. And then a lot of people wanted to suggest Imagine. And that was like, oh, that's an interesting song. And then someone said, well, it's going to be Paul McCartney on the stage, not John Lennon. And Paul McCartney probably doesn't want to sing a John Lennon song in this situation. So we're like, okay, that's rejected as well. So you're like, what can you do? And this is why these things end up inevitably at Hey Jude. And they're at Hey Jude because everyone can sing na 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 Hey Jude forever. You can literally just carry that on for an hour if you want to. And it's a Paul McCartney song. So in the end, that was the one that was chosen. But I've been asked in various job interviews, what's the best moment in your advertising career? And it wasn't that there were famous people there, although Richard Curtis is quite famous. But it was just being able to send a direct line to all those people singing those songs at the end, whether it was Pink Floyd or George Michael or The Who or whatever. That was kind of amazing. So
you had the final say of like the song. Was it just a consensus or was
my feeling is that they would have put a few in front of whoever the biggest dog singing at the end was, and that was probably Paul McCartney. I imagine that, I don't remember anyone actually saying Hey Jude at that point, but I imagine like if any of us thought it was Imagine and then said, hey Paul, how about you sing Imagine? He'd be like, oh yes, that's great, but it's a John Lennon song. How about we do Hey Jude? I don't know what happened after that. But basically, if you could have been the one who came up with, hey, we should all sing My Hero by Foo Fighters or something. Anyway, it ended up as that. And so when it was sung, because I went to the gig. Did you go to the gig as well?
No, I didn't go.
Okay. Because a whole bunch of us were.
Yeah.
Again, this was really cool. A whole bunch of us who worked on that as an account were given Golden Circle tickets. So there was a big sort of, I don't know, 10 or 15 people, AMV contingent, of everyone who worked on the account, able to just go into the sort of, it wasn't VIP. There were several thousand people in that thing, but I was still 12 people back from the front of the stage for Live 8. So that was really a huge privilege as well.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Those are the days, eh?
those were the days.
So I was on this job with Tony Kay. He was shooting a film for us. We were working with him for about, I don't know, 5 or 6 months or so. He lived out in LA. We were in the UK in London. And he came over for a few meetings for the project. And he got in touch with me and said, oh, do you want to go for breakfast and we can have a chat about the project? I was like, yeah, that's cool. So he was a member of Soho House, so he booked it all. And anyway, I went to meet him fairly early at Soho House. it's not really my thing, Soho House, but actually when there's no one in there, it's actually pretty nice. And it was dead. The restaurant was absolutely empty. It was just me and Tony and a couple of waiters and waitresses. Anyway, we're sat there. He's a massive legend, icon for me. So I was always a bit like awestruck every time we met up. So anyway, this is like the third sort of face-to-face meetings, I guess. Anyway, so we're sat there and waitress comes over and she goes, you know, what would you like to drink? Now, for most people, this doesn't really take much thinking, right? It probably takes, I don't know, 4 or 5 seconds to say you want to drink tea, coffee or water, whatever. So Tony goes, do you do matcha lattes? And she goes, yeah, we do. And he said, I drink this incredible matcha latte in LA and it's the only place that I'll drink it. Can I check the type of matcha that you use? So she goes, yeah, no problem. So she goes over, she comes back a minute later or so with the type of matcha and he's looking at it. He goes, yeah, okay, that looks good. And then he goes, oh, you know, what sort of, soy milk do you have? She's like, oh, I don't know, let me go and check. So she comes back a minute or two later with the type of milk that it was. And he's looking at it and he goes, yeah, that's it. Goes, that'll do. he goes, what cup does it come in? So she's like looking at him going, oh God, it's one of those. So anyway, so she goes back to the kitchen or the bar, wherever they make these drinks. And she comes back with the cup that they'd normally serve these lattes in. And he goes, no. He goes, I don't like those cups. I like them in big cups. You know, can you show me what you've got in big cups? So, bless her. So she goes away. She comes back with different cups. So he's looking at them and he's like, yeah, that one. So he decides on a cup. And then he goes, you know, how hot does the drink come in? And she was like, I'm not sure. And he was like, because it can't be boiling. I don't want it to be boiling. So then he was quite specific with, I think, 94 degrees or something like that. And so she goes away and she comes back. She goes, yeah, that's fine. It's not, we don't make it with boiling temperatures anyway. So he's like, okay, yeah, that's great. It's amazing. You know, great, fantastic. This must have been about 10 minutes, right? And I'm like, wow, we haven't even got to food yet. And anyway, so he's ordered his matcha soya thing, latte. And so she then looks at me and she goes, oh, so what would you like? And I said, do you do fresh mint tea? And she said, yeah. I said, yeah, I'll just have one of those. And then Tony then looks at me and he goes, what? He goes, well, what's that? What have you ordered? And I was like, fresh mint tea. And he was like, what do you mean? What is that? And I said, it's just fresh mint leaves with hot water. And he then looks at the waitress and he goes, what? He was like, what, you can do that? And she goes, yeah. And he was like, yeah, cancel my drink. I'll have what he's having.
Okay, so I've got quite an interesting story, and it goes some way to show what advertising was like in the 90s. It was crazy. And let's just say it involves a creative director, and a director. Now, the creative is a very famous award-winning creative that was notoriously difficult to work with. And the director is a famous award-winning director that was notorious to work with. And the two of them ended up working together. And funny enough, they ended up becoming friends. But what happened is that the creative wrote this script for a alcohol company, a famous alcohol company. It's an alcoholic drink. And it wrote this potentially brilliant script. And It got passed through the BACC, or what was called the BACC. I don't know what it's called now, which is the Advertising Authority. And they approved it at script form. So basically, I won't tell you exactly what the script was because it's too much of a giveaway, but the idea involved a very, very stressful job. Filming this very, very stressful job. And at the end of the day, to relax, the person involved in this job has a drink of this alcoholic drink to relax. And the shoot was prepared and they flew off to South America. I believe it was Argentina. So the creative, who was notoriously difficult to work with, the director, who was notoriously difficult to work with, went off and shot as much footage as they possibly could shoot with this producer and shot some amazing stuff. And some of the stuff that was in the that was shot was quite controversial, but it was felt necessary by the creative and the director to add weight to the idea that after a day like this, we desperately need to have a drink to relax. Right now, this was passed through script form by the Advertising Authority. But then what happened after it was all shot? They found out while they were still in Argentina that the authority had had another meeting about the script and decided that the key scene that made the point to the entire ad had to be removed. And this had been shot. And this was, not only had been shot, but it was the favourite scene by the notoriously difficult creative, and it was the favourite scene by the notorious difficult director. So the rushes were demanded to be sent over because the director refused to leave Argentina, right? And the rushes were demanded to be sent over. So eventually, after a couple of weeks, the director reluctantly sent the rushes to the agency. They started to cut the film together, and then they couldn't actually cut the film together because the very last scene of the commercial had been omitted from the rushes. So the director knew that the agency couldn't finish the film. Because he'd held on to the rushes so to stop the commercial being made because he's so angry with the agency that the script had been approved in the first place, has gone all to all this trouble to go and shoot it, and then they basically, in his eyes, the agency had made a cock-up, so why should his reputation be tarnished by their cock-up? So he held on to the rushes. So then it became a massive thing, as you can imagine, because then he started to get threatened that he was going to be taken to court. So what he did is he said, I haven't got those rushes. And they said, what do you mean you haven't got those rushes? He said, I've paid a runner to bury the rushes somewhere in Argentina. And I deliberately told the runner not to tell me where they'd buried it. I mean, this story was going around the agency like a bit. I mean, we couldn't believe it. And of course, the notorious, difficult creative who'd flown back by now was no help at all because he completely agreed with the director who'd now become a close friend. So basically, it went to court.
Wow.
Yeah, the TV producer, who I felt so sorry for, to have to deal with this nightmare, had to go to court, right? Eventually, they got the director back, had to go to court to demand those rushes. And then, magically, he got hold of the runner, found out where they were buried, and eventually, because he was going to get sued for a lot of money, the rushes were returned. And then those rushes were put into the ad. The ad was completed and it ran. And of course, they were right. It wasn't very good. I think it kind of bombed the ad in the end. I can't think of any other time in advertising where a director so angry with the cut that an agency had done had actually ordered a runner to bury the rushes that were missing to complete the ad in Argentina, in South America. I mean, they're bonkers days. Now, as far as I can remember, because this is a while back, these details are correct. I do believe it was Argentina. It could have been another country in South America, but it was definitely South America. And all the rest of it is true. But yeah.
I've got a quick story about pay, actually. So me and basically walked in off the street almost into it was the last place that we'd taken our book, and we'd worked on our book for quite a long time, and it had gotten better and better and better, and we'd started to pick up placements, and so we felt the time was right to go and see it. And when we walked in, we saw a sort of middleweight team, and they really liked the book, and they said, wait downstairs in reception while we're going to try and get it in front of the creative directors. And so we went downstairs, waited an hour or so, and then the creative director's PA came down and said, oh, can you go up and see them on the seventh floor? And we walked in, and the creative directors were sort of flicking through our book, and one of them, Nick Worthington, looked up and he said, do you want a job? And we're like, yeah, we want a job. It'd be amazing. That was like a Thursday. And then on the Monday, we were basically sitting in the corridor because didn't have room for us, but they wanted us in so badly that they just put a desk in the corridor whilst they worked it out, right? And we had one computer between two, and for ages we had one mobile phone between two, and then gradually we got an office. But they employed us whilst the executive creative director was ill. And so we're sort of working away. I think we've been there about a month and just really enjoying it. And, you know, on this like really good wage for a sort of first time wage. And, you know, sort of telling my mum, yeah, I'm working, got a job, it's brilliant. And the executive creative director comes back and we hadn't met him. And he sort of walked past us and went, who are you? And we're like, oh, we work here. Hello. About an hour later, the ECD's PA comes to us and said he'd like to see you in his office. So we sort of sheepishly walk into the corner office, and he's got like two pieces of paper face down on the table. And we're like, he's the fuckers making us redundant straight away. This is insane. And he goes, I've got some good news and some bad news. I'm like, oh, God. All right, well, what's the good news? He said, you've still got a job. And then, okay, all right, well, what's the bad news? He said, I'm cutting your pay in half until you prove yourself to me. So we're like, what the fuck? So, you know, that's just not, you know, I'm sure you just can't do that. So, like, I think we were on something like, this could be wrong, but we'd started on about 30 grand. And, you know, this is about 15 years ago. And he'd cut it to 15, something like that. I was just like, how am I supposed, you know, this is just like absolutely insane. Like, how can you do that? But, you know, like, I have always had the attitude of, I'm not going to let you beat me. I'm not going to let you beat me. So we just kind of knuckled down and just worked really hard. And then, to be honest, I don't think it was long. I think it was a matter of a few months before we got the call again, and we went into his office and he had two pieces of paper down. He said, I've only got good news. He said, I'm reinstating you. I really like the work that you're doing. I'm putting your wage back up to what it was. So I think it was just him basically, you know, like the equivalent of a dog, you know, kind of pissing on your bush or whatever, like, this is my territory. and just, you know, showing us who's boss. But yeah.
God, yeah, you're lucky you didn't cut it by half again. Thank you to the sponsor of this podcast, Boom CGI. They're a team of digital artists specializing in the craft of CGI animation across entertainment, advertising, and of course, pharma. The team love nothing more than taking ideas from concept through to completion. They are highly skilled in delivering character design, CGI modeling, texturing, animation, and post-production, and are huge, huge supporters of the Creative Floor Awards. So do check them out at boomcgi.com.
Oh, yeah, okay. Here's the one last story, because this is, this, I don't know if, it's not nothing about famous people or clients or anything, but, and it's, I don't think it's about the old days of advertising. You could still obviously do this these days, but so we made this commercial in 2000 for Cellnet, which doesn't exist anymore, but is folded into BT and was the mobile phone arm of that kind of thing. And they were doing the shitty internet wireless something, WAP or something like that, and we did some ads for it. And one of them involved us going to this island called Cozumel, which is just off the coast of Mexico, near Cancun in the Gulf of Mexico. And so we were putting all that together, and we had to cast a couple of people, and we were casting in the casting part of it. We had to have people be on the phone, and we were pretending, we asked them to pretend they'd been dumped, and they were calling their friend about having split up with their boyfriend or something like that. And it wasn't being dumped, it was splitting up. So everyone did this audition where they were going, oh yeah, I'm free now, I can go out and, you know, I'm young, free and single, it's great, we split up. And then this one person, the only person, did a read where she was like all quite sad about it, and it was a really good audition, and she was a really good actor. So we ended up casting her, and then we went off to Cozumel to shoot it, and I ended up sort of getting into a relationship with that actress, and 5 days later getting engaged to her. So you know, on once, yeah, five yeah days. Yeah, we'd known each other 5 days, and we came back to England, and this might go outside of advertising in terms of, you know, any sort of point of the story, but it was like, it just felt right, but it felt right to both of us. Like, it might have been crazy for me to ask, but it was also possibly crazy of her to say yes. So I got engaged after 5 days to this actress who we cast in this commercial, and that was all really cool. And we got married 6 months later in Las Vegas. And the reason why the story works is we're still married today, 24 years later, we're 24 years in a couple of months. And that's an advertising story. I'm not saying it does or doesn't happen because of what advertising is or isn't now. Like I said, you could easily cast someone in a commercial today and have that be something that happens as well. But yeah, it was really weird because we just got back after 5 days, and then we had to do all the post on the commercial. And, you know, I don't know if anyone listening to this has got engaged or whatever, but, you know, you're in a bit of a weird high after that. So we, like, you know, went for breakfast, and then I went to, like, the mill to do all the things. And I couldn't really tell everyone because they'd have thought I was insane. And in fact, so I had to go and sit in the mill and kind of order food and talk about post-production, but I couldn't really say what had just happened because it was a bit too weird. And I couldn't really manage that for very long. So maybe it was a day or two afterwards. I said, I just got engaged to Gabby, and the people I was working with, we'd all been on the thing together in Mexico, and they were like, what? And I said, yeah, we got engaged. And they're like, no. And they're like, yeah. And so, like I said, it works out because we're still married, but like friends of mine thought like they needed to have an intervention or something because I'd gone crazy. But in the end, you know, trust your instincts, everybody, it can work out. But so that's something. People meet their other half at work quite often. Mine's an unusual story because we got engaged so quickly. But obviously, you know, people in ad agencies meet people in ad agencies and stuff. And, you know, there are people in production companies and people you cast, whatever, you know, you're around other like-minded sort of people. And I think it probably happens quite often that people meet their other halves in agencies in one way or another. But that was my story, which is a bit unusual, I guess.
Could you put the wedding on expenses?
I wish.
Thank you so much for listening. Do hit subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast so you don't miss the next episode as soon as it drops. If you have a spare 10 seconds, well, even if you don't have a spare 10 seconds, please do write us a review. Good one, obviously. Until next time.